We gave a lot of play to David Ansara's recent speech that he made at the Rand Club about state proofing. But even there, he gave credit to Sakalicha for the idea about state proofing. We haven't spoken to Piet le Roux, the chief executive of Sakalicha, for a while. So it's about time that we got an update on what's happening there. And indeed, what Sakalicha is telling its members to expect in this big election that's coming up in less than a month. Well, Piet, the fact that we haven't spoken with you in a while is no fault of yours. You guys have been really busy. I see this latest story about estate agents, and you're going into bat, presumably, for members who are estate agents who are now being told by government that they might lose their licenses if they don't sell or give away, which is more practical, a big slug of their equity. Just explain what's going on there.
Alec, we're really at that point where the regulator, well, the state, is attempting to set entry requirements on a racial basis in the economy. That's what this is. So the Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority has announced last month that it will refuse to issue Fidelity Fund certificates to all property practitioners. Currently, these are mostly estate agents, but that includes developers, auctioneers, bond originators, management agents, and so on. They will refuse to issue them a Fidelity Fund certificate, which will make it illegal for them to operate as property practitioners. So that's making BE an entry requirement for participation in the industry and in the economy.
How many people are affected?
Currently, there are about 40,000 Fidelity Fund certificates issued to mostly estate agents and a little bit as well to employees of attorneys. Those are two of the categories of property practitioners that came into definition when the new Property Practitioners Act was brought into action 2 years ago. So there are 10 more categories to which this will be expanded. So 40,000 is the current number. The current enforcement drive is against businesses, and these businesses will be required to have at least 40 points on a BE certificate, or they will be refused their Fidelity Fund certificate. Now, I must add that this is what the PPRA intends to do, but we intend to stand in their way, and I think business is not going to accept this. We really can't, because we can't accept BE as an entry requirement for participation in the economy.
But there has been little move as well on the minimum amount, or rather the maximum amount that a company has to turn over or can turn over before it loses its right or level 4 BE certificate. I think it's been 10 million for a while now. Is that also not something to be looked at, given that you are taking them on, you are taking on the lawmakers in this respect? Smaller businesses might be saying, but hang on a minute, you know, when it was introduced to 10 million rand, that might have been relevant, but given inflation, etc., that's now also become a barrier.
Look, on many levels, BEE do not make sense. But I think to take one step back, at Sakalicha, we think of the current phase of BEE as, we call it the third wave BEE. And it's distinct. So let me run through the phases quickly. In the 90s, we had a voluntary phase of business across communities in South Africa. It made a lot of sense. And for the first time, after the restrictions of the 80s and of the National Party government, it became possible to voluntarily do business across racial and community boundaries in South Africa. It was a boom time for business. And if you look at the BE reports of the late 90s, early 2000s, there are billions of rands of deals, and those are only the ones that were counted. But of course, the economy really opened up in the 90s. Then in 2000 and in 2003, respectively, the first Procurement Acts and the BE Act came into effect. And then after that, we had 15 to 20 years of second wave BE, which was a statutory phase of BE. So we had the voluntary phase of the 90s, which isn't really BE, it's just doing business on, you know, across communities. Then we had the business, the BE, the statutory BE of the last 22 decades, and that BE was driven by these acts, and it made it compulsory to do BE when you wanted to do business with the state. So it's a vertical application of BE. What we've now been seeing in the last 5 years approximately is what we call third wave BEE. It's where this relationship is turned on its side and where doing any business at all becomes subject to BEE as an entry requirement. We saw this with the amendment to the Competition Act in 2018. That's now really these public interest clauses. You'll see BEE requirements on any merger and acquisition and debt finance structure. It's there for the ICASA regulations. It's now with the property regulations. It's there in the financial sector. And in all of these places, it's not about doing business. It's about making BEE a professional and an entry requirement for doing any business at all. And that's not acceptable. You can't license participation in the economy based on BEE.
But that has been licensed, if you like, for some time now. Because if you haven't had a business that is smaller than 10 million rand turnover, you have to all intents and purposes, and unless you're only going to be dealing with other small businesses. But if you work with any company of any size and you have turnover of more than 10 million rand, because of the laws, you will have to bring in some kind of a partner or some kind of initiative to get your license to align with what the government wants.
Well, the nexus of the origin of that requirement is still in second wave BEE. That is where, because there's a sort of a chain reaction through the economy where a big company wants to do business with the state, and through its supply chain, it then requires its suppliers and so on to have some element of BEE. That's where this originates. It still originates within the state to business transaction network. What we're now seeing is, for the first time, it being directly defined as an entry requirement for the economy. These requirements differ based on various industries. You have the generic scorecards for the BEE Act, but then you also have industry-specific scorecards. And with very few exceptions, up to now, it was still voluntary, and it is still voluntary to do BEE. Of course, it gets enforced and required through this, you know, through the chain reaction, but there are many companies in South Africa who do not do BEE, and that's perfectly fine. They don't do BEE certificates. What we're now seeing is, for the very first time, attempts to make it illegal to do business if you don't have a minimum BEE score. And that is a distinct development, and it has to be opposed. It's not easy to and BEE is probably going to be with us for a while, the vertical relationship where you do business with the state. But I think it's a crucial moment for us if we allow it to become the norm that regulators can refuse to issue you normal documents and licenses just based on BEE. We're in for a very kind, very different kind, and very harmful kind of regulation.
Yeah, it's interesting. If it starts with Fidelity Fund certificates, it could extend presumably into CIPRA, into registering a company, if you don't have the required BEE. There's a lot of cynics who say that Cyril Ramaphosa has been adopting a boiled frog syndrome. When you talk about three waves or three phases of BEE, it sounds a little bit like boiling the frog.
Well, Mr. Ramaphosa has been intimately involved in all three phases. In the 90s, he was part of several significant deals, of which I don't know the details, but he seems to have done well from it. Then he re-entered politics, but even before he did, he was at the very origin of the Black Economic Empowerment Act. He was the chairman of the commission appointed by then-President Thabo Mbeki in the late 1990s to produce a report with the recommendations that eventually in 2003 led to the Black Economic Empowerment Act. That was the Black Economic Empowerment Commission. And so Mr. Ramaphosa was the chairman, really, of the committee that designed and recommended the Black Economic Empowerment Act. And then, interestingly, once he became president, we saw really this third wave of BEE take off. So I'm afraid that Mr. Ramaphosa's track record with regard to BEE and the harmful effects of it on the economy is not very good.
Okay, Pete, so we've put that to the one side. We're now looking ahead at a binary election where there is a possibility that the socialist parties, if you like, ANC, MK, and the EFF, could get to a constitution-changing 66% majority. It's not by any means a certainty, but it is a possibility. And from an organization like yours, what are you advising members to protect themselves against the risk of this happening?
Well, we like the word state-proofing. David and Sarah has used it, and with our blessing, we're very happy to see that word being used a lot. But it's not that easy to state-proof. So as for businesses, we don't have blank recommendations because businesses differ, you know, and depending on the circumstances, a security company might do well if crime goes up and so on. So let me not try and make one single recommendation for all businesses on how they should improve themselves. But I think there is something to be said for how business in general can approach not only this election, but what will follow. Because this election, whichever way it goes, is not going to solve overnight the problems in South Africa. We have a bureaucracy, a public sector, state employees, I would say millions, but lots of people who get a lot of money for doing not very valuable jobs and who are set in their very harmful ways. And that's not going to go away. You can't, you know, the city of Joburg has 70,000 or something employees. That's probably a very high number for how bad the city looks. So a lot of them actually needs to be replaced, but that's not easy to do. So a lot of the problems are baked into the state apparatus. So what we would like to recommend and suggest to businesses that don't expect short-term solutions. Prepare for an unstable political environment in South Africa, whichever way the next election goes. And let's use the next 10 years of weak state and of state failure in different sections, in different places to different degrees. Let's use the next 10 years to redefine the role of the state in the economy. We've let the state grow incredibly big, incredibly powerful with relation to the economy. We've let the state grow to think that it can tell businesses that based on race, they can participate in the economy or not. In the next 10 years, the state will keep making these pronouncements, but because it will be so weakened, there will be a lot of opportunity for business, if we are organized, to redefine the role and the borders of what the state can actually do, the extent to which it can interfere in the economy. It's happened all over the world, in all states. It grows and it shrinks. Depending on how well business is organized and the balance of forces. And business in South Africa has a great opportunity in the next 10 years to set the scene for a very prosperous future. We have to not only look at elections, we have to actually become strong enough to say no to very harmful bureaucratic and political ideas.
Has it started happening? Saying no?
Saying no, yes. If we look at the outpouring over the last few days, just on these property practitioner regulatory authority rules on BEE, I think that the level of willingness in the economy to accept new rules are very low. Alec, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it was very hard to criticize BEE in public because everybody knew it was off. Everybody knew there was something rotten in the state of BEE. But it was hard to discuss because we, you know, everybody had colleagues and friends and fellow employees who were of different races and different communities, and now it becomes, you know, difficult to discuss. Today, very few people think BEE is a success. Very few people, are not willing to criticize it, and this goes across communities. Dr. Motsuanyane, who passed away yesterday, was a vocal critic of BEE. He was of elderly age, so it wasn't so pronounced in his last years. But if you go look at things he said just 10, 15 years ago against BEE, I think today it's much easier to be BEE against BEE, and I think businesses are willing to say no. I think we are going to see over the next few years people just saying, well, I know there are risks in doing business without BEE and without permission from the government, but I'm going to be prevented from doing business anyway, so I'm willing to take the risk. It's going to be messy, but business people are going to start saying no. And I think, you know, you don't pronounce that you're not compliant. We're not at that phase. So I think lots more is happening under the radar than what we see in newspaper headlines.
But on the other hand, there is quite a lot of way around BEE if you are not entirely ethical. Are you going to suggest to your members that they think of doing it that way, i.e. they're not going to stand up and say, we are not compliant, so it's not I'm Gatvol and Futsek ANC, but it is another way around it, perhaps by not following normal ethical business principles?
Well, first point is that I think it's ethical to not do BEE. BEE is a harmful policy, and ethics demand that business do what's good for itself and society. Those are, if you could do both of those virtuous things, and you're doing the highest virtue, serve as the common good as well as your own good. So the first point is, not doing BEE is the ethical thing to do. I'm not saying not doing business across communities. That's great. That will happen. But not doing BEE, which is a very specific temporary government policy, is the ethical thing to do. But now there's a problem. Some laws and some regulations demand, or some regulators are attempting to demand of you that you do BEE on a penalty, which would be an unethical penalty, but nevertheless a penalty of prosecution or fines and so on. It's not only BEE, it's also this very bad Employment Equity Amendment Act and the regulations that has to do with that. So the second point to make is that the requirements to do BEE is unethical or are unethical. What Saakalicha recommends to businesses is that they do maximum achievable non-compliance. And we're saying maximum achievable because it's not always achievable not to do BEE. Sometimes the risks to your staff are just too great, or when you weigh up all the responsibilities you have, the risk of losing a license might be enough that you do comply to some extent with BEE. The important thing is to do what we call maximum achievable non-compliance. Create a value-adding business, do business across community lines with whomever you like, and make the world and the country a better place. BEE is not the way to do that. If you have to do some BEE, that's acceptable. But the ethical thing to do is to do as little as possible of this harmful government policy as you can, while making the world around you as good a place as you can.
Okay, so BEE, we've got a very strong position there. What about General de Vries's warning that there could be a repeat of the KZN July 2021 anarchy? And he's the former deputy head of the army at the time of Constant Viljoen. So he's a person who comes with substantial weight. For him to be making these kind of pronouncements cannot be taken lightly. How do you advise your members when they hear this kind of thing?
Alec, the possibility of future unrest in South Africa is great, not because it will be a new thing, but because we've seen it happen. And so it won't be unprecedented. And there are many reasons to think that as the economy gets tighter and money gets, so there's less to lose, or people stand to lose more at politics, we will see increased risks of unrest. Whether it's of the scale and of the concentration that we saw with the KZN riots, or it's more dispersed, as we've been seeing for many years, riots in different towns across the country sporadically. Any day there are several. Well, that remains to be seen. So it is something to be taken serious. I would venture two recommendations. The first would be to integrate your business in the local security structures. And that doesn't mean only signing up to a security company. It means finding out who are the other businesses with whom you need to coordinate in times of distress, not only to protect your business, but to protect the local economy, the economy in which you operate. Because if a mob runs through High Street and ransacks businesses, that town can go to zero. So it's important to not only, in protecting your business, it's also about protecting the local economy. So I think that's the secret sauce for business chambers in the next 10 years. It's realizing that it's a business chamber is not a place to hand out business cards and do business with each other. It's a place where you protect and advance your local economy. Take responsibility for it. So my first recommendation from Saakalicha's side is get involved with the local chamber of commerce or the ratepayers association or the community policing forum. Find find a way to strengthen those ties, and then do your best when things happen. There will need to be a coordinated response at a local level. It's unlikely that the police or the army can quell significant unrest like we've seen in KZN. The second thing Saklicha is doing is we're doing some interesting experiments. We'll make proper announcements at a later stage, but we're looking at introducing private patrols on some of the highways. That'll be funded publicly without a profit mandate, a profit motive. We've been collecting the money, and at some point in the next few months, we'll look to launch the first pilot project where we will deploy a private patrol on a 200-kilometer stretch of highway in South Africa with a mandate to protect life, property, and keep the road open. And that will be a public service that we intend to show how business can actually solve common security problems in the public interest. So those are two things Saklicha can recommend.
Interesting development. Before we go, there is a lot of speculation now that the DA will lose its majority in the Western Cape. It's a fairly small majority of 24 seats out of 42. If that were to happen, would this change your view, if any, on Cape independence?
No, in general, firstly, Saklicha is not too interested in the specific demarcation around South Africa or who's in power or not. We think our mission is to create non-state solutions for a favorable business environment. So our strategy certainly wouldn't change depending on who's in power in different places. But we do recognize that successful societies tend to be those that welcome decentralization. Successful economies aren't centrally controlled. And as such, I think there's much more promise in a decentralized future in South Africa, not only at a provincial level, but even with much more involvement and discretion at the local government level for some of the cities and metros and towns across South Africa, rather than having everything run from the union buildings. So you get my point, Alec. We are in favor of decentralization. That's just been a winning recipe for successful societies. That's what I'd like to say about that.
And to close off with, how are you seeing South Africa evolve? We've got this binary election. There's a lot of focus on it, not just from local investors, local businesses, but internationally as well. If you could take a 10-year view on the way that you've seen things going in the last 10 years, if you were to use Clem Sunter's analogies as a futurist, what would the flags be that are most likely to be waved over that period?
Alec, one thing that is sure to happen is that there will be significant political and social unrest over the next 10 years. It'll be unstable. It's just baked into what we have right now. Now, what will make me very optimistic as we go through the next 10 years is if we see businesses organizing to say no and finding ways of doing maximum achievable non-compliance. Also, we will see, this is not even sort of what I hope to see, I just think we will certainly see less capability from the state. The state will keep speaking in very strong terms, but it will its ability to execute and control very specific elements of the economy and society will diminish. That's a good thing because we will see businesses seize the messy opportunities that come with that, and it will also almost be a free market off the books. Sort of the statutes will keep looking bad, but as the government loses its ability to enforce those very bad laws, that'll actually be a good thing. So I don't think our solution in South Africa must be looking for a stronger state, and then we're happy about that. I think there are scenarios in which we have a very prosperous future with a significantly weak state That's messy, but I think that's the most exciting and promising opportunity for us over the next 10 years.
Pete Le Roux telling us to take greater responsibility, especially if you're in business. He is the CEO of Saakalicha. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.